the call to defund police gained national attention after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And weeks later, policymakers and community leaders continue to debate this idea. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Milwaukee Common Council is exploring plans to cut the police budget by 10% next year. Schools in Wisconsin and elsewhere are taking steps to end security contracts with police, their school resource officers. What questions do you have about spending on law enforcement in our state over time? What do you want to know about where your taxes go? We're at 800-642-1234. Jason Stein is research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, which recently published a report looking at trends in police spending. Jason, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. I appreciate being here.
So you were tracking law enforcement spending in Wisconsin and saw a pretty dramatic increase over the past three decades, almost 60% when you look at inflation factoring in. How did you measure this?
Sure. So when you look at spending on law enforcement, it is up per capita over time. It is up above the rate of inflation. And when you look at local spending by municipalities or counties, it's also up as a share of their budget. When you look over the past 30 years, it's down a little bit in the case of municipalities from its peak in 2013 as a share of a budget. But it still takes up a larger share of overall spending today than it did a generation ago.
And where did you get this data? How did you manipulate it?
Sure. A couple different places. One, all the municipalities and counties in the state report their taxes and spending to the State Department of Revenue every year. That data is available going back to the 80s. We analyze that data. Then, as well, to compare Wisconsin to the rest of the nation, the U.S. Census Bureau collects data in a similar way on state and local governments around the country, and we also looked at that data, and we can talk about it.
Yeah, so in 2017, Wisconsin was among the 23 states where municipalities spend the largest share of their budgets on police. What does the category of municipal spending include? What's all in there?
Well, so that's a good question, and it really varies by state. So
okay.
In some states, municipalities take a lead role in there's mayoral control of school districts, and the school is actually part of the municipal budget, and there you'll see K-12 spending being the largest municipal category. In Wisconsin, it's police and law enforcement. However, that doesn't mean necessarily that we don't have significant funding for education, because it's just that in Wisconsin, school districts are their own unit of local government, and their taxing and spending is reported separately from municipalities.
So there is some nuance there as to how local governments, who controls what in terms of those spending dollars, those tax dollars. We're talking about spending on police protection with Jason Stein, research director from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, taking your questions on how budgets form around policing at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jason, as you look at those trend lines, what is behind this gradual increase in spending on law enforcement? Did you look at anything that is driving this?
Sure. And one thing that we can say, and I think a lot of your listeners already know this, is we don't take a position on the issues that we write about. We just try and provide context. So when you look at what's driving law enforcement spending, the vast majority of it goes to pay for staff. So that could be sworn officers, or it could also be other staff members in the department, and it goes to salaries and benefits. So, I mean, clearly one driver would be the cost of health care over time, which has risen more quickly than inflation. Pension and benefits as well. And then, labor costs typically rise more quickly than the rate of inflation, right? So that's one thing that's driving the cost of any organization that relies mainly on people. And then, finally, and we don't have numbers on this, but one thing to think about as well is that in Wisconsin, most collective bargaining for most public employees was repealed in 2011, but most collective bargaining remains in place for police officers and firefighters. So that may be a factor as well.
How would that be a factor? What do you see there? Is it unions asking for higher wages? What would be going on?
Sure. Right. It's that and the fact that local governments no longer have a legal obligation to bargain most aspects of the employee-employer relationship with public employees. But in the case of, with the exception of something around, a few things around healthcare, that obligation remains for police officers and firefighters and the local governments that employ them.
Let's take a look at crime rates here. Crime rates have fallen since the mid-80s. Are these factored into how you look at this data and what you see about overall crime trends?
Well, we think that's important context. So the violent crime rate is up somewhat in the FBI data for the state of Wisconsin. Property crime rates are down substantially, and so overall crime rates are down substantially. It's important to note that, you know, that over this decades-long period that we looked at going back to the mid-80s, laws have changed, police reporting practices have changed significantly, and definitions of some crimes, such as sexual assault, have changed. And all that makes the data less comparable. That said, even though it's imperfect, we think it provides at least some context for talking about police spending. The one other thing that is important to recognize is that police perform a lot of other functions besides responding to crimes. So they can also show up when there's a medical emergency, they staff events. So as the public and elected officials think about what law enforcement does, it is more than just responding to crimes. Although I think, again, that's the thing that most of us think about when we think about the police.
Yeah, and so there is nuance within that budget. That budget isn't directly going to specifically crime, that it can be a range of other things that police would be responding to. Did you look at it all, how agencies within that nuance would be breaking down those budgets and where those dollars would go within the agency?
Sure. I mean, one thing to be aware of is most of your law enforcement spending in Wisconsin is happening at the level of cities and villages. And there it is the number one expense. When you look at county, for counties, it's also a significant expense, although their health and human services is also a key spending item for counties. You know, one thing as well that it's worth pointing out is that even though spending has risen more quickly than inflation, it doesn't always necessarily translate into larger police force levels. So, you know, here we have more limited data, but when we looked at the largest cities in the state late last year, one thing that we noticed was that even though in some cases police force levels may have grown, on a per capita basis in most of the 10 largest cities in the state, police force levels are actually down over the past decade. So in other words, there's been spending increases typically, but they haven't been great enough to keep the number of officers per capita
on pace with population growth. Wisconsin Policy Forum Research Director Jason Stein is with us as we look at their new report with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about police funding trends here in Wisconsin and a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. couple storylines here from the report. Law enforcement makes up a larger share of total county spending now than at any point since the mid-80s. But police staffing levels in Wisconsin's largest cities have generally trailed behind population increases as overall crime levels do fall. So do you work in law enforcement? How does your agency put together a budget? How do you prioritize your funding? Has your department had cuts in recent years? Where to? Join in 800-642-1234. Jason Stein is research director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and he stays with us. Jason, as we were talking there, as you looked at the largest cities in Wisconsin, what did you see there as population growth continues over the decades?
Sure. I mean, again, what you did see is this significant increase in spending, but and in some cases, an increase in the number of officers. But, you know, when you looked at it on a per capita basis, you still saw that Oshkosh and Racine did have still more officers on a per capita basis. Janesville was roughly flat, but then Madison, Green Bay, Kenosha, Waukesha, Milwaukee, Appleton, Eau Claire all saw a drop in the number of officers per capita. In Milwaukee, we've also seen with the budget challenges in that city, significant numbers of police positions being eliminated just because of the broader budget challenges. Mm. And we may see that in other communities as well, not purely because of a policy decision, but because with COVID-19, you know, every aspect of local government budgets is going to be stressed for the next couple of years.
Funding for police departments is increasingly coming from the federal government. Federal departments like Justice, USDA, they have grant programs that are for, you know, hiring more police or outfitting them in gear, building new police facilities. How do you treat federal funding coming through grants in police budgets that you looked at?
Sure. So, I mean, what you would see is that because those grants phase out over time, then they would be funded. The officers that were hired would be funded by local resources. And so, you know, they would certainly show up in the spending reports, you know, as amounts are being spent by the local government at that point. And you do see that in the city of Madison. You know, we did a brief on their budget back in the fall, and there was a significant increase in spending on police officers, but not a large increase in the number of officers. And one of the reasons was a federal grant was phasing out, and the city was providing its own resources to start to pay for those officers that had been previously hired.
Oh, so there wouldn't be a gap or perhaps layoffs. One of the programs I wanted to ask you about is the COPS program out of the Justice Department, the Community-Oriented Policing Services Program. And they've provided $14 billion to hire and train local police in community policing. Was there any way to glean how much Wisconsin gets through programs like COPS?
That's a good question. We haven't looked at that specifically. I mean, that has been, again, it is certainly something that you see at the local level, that when officers are hired, they may be, you know, that is one of the things that can often result in that is a federal grant. And there is then over time the need for the local community, if they choose, they don't have to choose to accept the grant, but if they do, to over time begin to fund that officer out of local resources eventually.
We're talking about spending on police protection with a new report out from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Jason Stein is research director. You can join in with your questions about how funding is spent in your community through policing and how you feel about policing in your community. Are these dollars well spent? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Jason, have municipalities in other states prioritized services other than law enforcement over the past three decades? Do you see any shifts there?
Well, you certainly see that when you think about other things that are happening at the local level. There has been, you know, particularly in the 90s, there was a big push for school funding at the state level. And that certainly did, that push for school funding at the state level impacted what's called shared revenue, which is just basically discretionary state aid to cities and villages, you know, which a lot of which goes to pay for police and firefighters. So, you know, in addition, the same thing happened at the state level around paying for Medicaid to some degree, you know, coverage of low income and also people in, you know, people in nursing homes, people with disabilities for long-term care. So you do see some reprioritization there. But overall, as I think local governments have faced some tighter budgets over the past decade, they have, by and large, generally tried to prioritize law enforcement and firefighters among, you know, sort of the scarce resources that they have.
Did you see any anomalies in your data, any communities in Wisconsin that were outliers, that were bucking the trend toward putting more of the budget toward policing?
I mean, that's a good question. We were generally looking at it globally at the overall state level.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one thing you do see is you do tend to see, and we're not necessarily arguing that police and crime rates are directly linked in terms of causing crime to be higher or lower. You do tend to see that the communities with higher crime rates do have larger police forces and therefore are spending more on police.
When you hear these cries for defund the police and what that actually means, and you look at the budget and the data that you've broken down, you know, is there any way for communities to do that? How do they go about doing that or taking out that piece of their budget?
Sure. So, I mean, we don't take a position on an issue like that, but I guess I could offer a couple points. One is this is a chance for people to dig into the work that organizations like ours do to try and explain how their tax dollars get spent at the local level. And you want to think about not just your city and village, but also the school district, the county. There can be special districts that do sewage and stuff like that. But ultimately, so that's a chance to look at that. And then as well, there's a chance to think about how the money is spent. In the case of law enforcement, you know, there definitely is some equipment purchases and things like that. Most of the money goes to personnel. So if the budget goes up or down, that's going to tend to have a direct effect on personnel. So I mean, those are some of the things for people to consider as they think about what they would like to see happen in their local communities. And this is a chance for both elected officials and ordinary citizens, I think, to re-engage with budgeting at the local level.
How would they engage around return on investment and whether those dollars they're putting toward that biggest piece of their budget, that they're getting the best outcome from it?
I mean, that's always the most challenging thing to look at in the data is, and this is really, I think, one of the big challenges in public life, is we have really good data on what things cost, you know, how much we tax, how much we spend. We don't always have the same data on outcomes. In the case of education, which is, I think, one of the things that people have been focusing on, we do have pretty good data, and so there you can talk a lot about the outcomes. In the case of social services and just sort of the demographics of what's happening in the community, you know, there can be good data as well. But again, it sometimes can be really tricky to try and get at what is the impact of the different policy levers that elected officials are pulling. And, you know, it's part of, I think, a longer conversation that has to happen.
Yeah, and it sounds like, too, policing, you know, crime rates as a whole may not dictate exactly the worth of what that budget piece is, that crime isn't everything.
Right. And again, you know, certainly, you know, individual steps that, you know, are being taken may or may not have direct causation of sort of crime rates. You know, in other words, sometimes things can just be correlated. So because there is a lot of crime, there may be a decision made to have a lot of police officers and so on and so forth. So it isn't, you know, necessarily the case that all these things directly flow out of one another.
Jason, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Jason Stein is Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Coming up, we get results from the new Marquette University Law School poll that gauges opinion on the presidential race, the administration's handling of the pandemic, and recent protests. We have poll director Charles Franklin coming up after this news update on the Ideas Network. Talking about the results from the new Marquette University Law School poll here on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The poll of Wisconsin registered voters included questions on race and police. It was conducted last week before the violent protests this week at the state capitol. What do you want to know about the poll and its takeaways? We're at 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin is poll director and ready to break down the numbers for us. He's a Marquette University professor of law and public policy, co-founder of Pollster.com, founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So once again, in this poll, you asked Wisconsin voters who they want in the White House. What did you see about the takeaways there with President Trump and Joe Biden?
In this June poll, 49% support Biden, 41% for Trump. That's an 8-point margin. A month ago in May, it was a 3-point Biden lead, and it had been 3 points in March as well. Back in February, it was tied. So we've seen a trend in Biden's direction and a notable bump of 5 points in this last month. To that 49-41 margin for Biden.
I wonder if this is bearing out in other battleground states, because New York Times Siena College poll of swing states, it's looking like, you know, polling results are matching up here with what you're seeing in Wisconsin.
Yes, they surveyed a number of states, and that's terrific to get lots of individual state polls. As we know, the Electoral College matters a lot, and individual states are pretty rare. But in the last three polls that have come out from Wisconsin, Fox News in early June had Biden by 9. We yesterday had Biden by 8. And in that New York Times Siena poll that just came out this morning, they have Biden by 11. So if you look at that spread, it's pretty close together. And it all agrees that the margin is in the high single digits, low double digits. National averages have also shown, both nationally and in individual states, that the last month has improved Biden's standing. And of course, between the virus, the economy, and protests, it has not been a month filled with much good news for President Trump. And he suffered from that, apparently, in polling here as well as elsewhere.
You talked with 805 registered Wisconsin voters, some cell phone, some landline. How did they break down politically?
Yeah, it's about 65% cell phone, by the way.
Okay.
Politically, it's a slightly Republican sample, 45 Republican, 44 Democrat. If you don't include people who say they're independent but lean to one party or the other, it's 31 Republican, 29 Democrat. If we look at our complete set of polls since 2017, the average has been 1 point more Republican or a dead even split. So we're at 1 or 2 points more Republican. We're right close to the long-term average.
How do you make sure you can get that almost equal representation?
Well, that's the sampling. The random sampling that we do gives every phone number in the state an equal chance of being called. And so we let the magic of probability handle that. It varies, of course. We can have a more Democratic or more Republican sample month to month, but it doesn't vary by much.
Let's look at what you found in President Trump's approval rating in this poll. Overall job approval rating was 45%. How does that compare to your previous polling?
Yeah, it's down 2 points from the May poll. It was 47 then. President Trump's job approval only moves in a small range, both nationally and here in the state. If it was 47 last month, it was 48 a couple of months before that. And so there's been a little bit of a slippage down from sort of steady at 48 early in the year to 47 last month to 45 this month. The 45 support or approval is as low as we've seen since last August. But it has only moved over about a 3 point range in that time. When you look at individual areas of approval, specific issues, though, there's a lot of variation in how much his approval is compared to this small movement in overall approval. When we ask about how he's responded to protests and police misconduct, only 30% approve. When we ask about how he's handling the COVID virus, 44% approve. That's unchanged from last month. And on his strong suit, the economy, 50% approve. But that is down 4 points from May when it was 54. And also disapproval moved up 6 points on the economy. So I think if you look at this and say, what has happened over the last month? His strong suit is a little bit weaker than it was. The epidemic is really not changed. But the new issue on the scene, the protests and the response to police killing of Black Americans, is really quite a notably poor showing for the president. I mentioned it's 30% approval, 58% disapprove of how he's handling his job on that.
And this, the question about protests and the Black Lives Matter movement, that is a new question on this poll. Is that right?
That's right. We've asked questions about the police and police behavior in the past, but obviously the current protests are new. What we found there statewide was that 61% approve of the protests, 36% disapprove. 59% approve of the Black Lives Matter movement, 27% have an unfavorable view. But for the police, 72% have a favorable view of the police, just 18% a negative view of the police. So there's some variation there. I think the takeaway is there's a good deal of sympathy for both the protests and the Black Lives Matter movement, but there's also a lot of favorability to the police. We do see substantial differences by race in these views, but majorities of white respondents approve of the protests and have a favorable view of the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as a big majority of white respondents who are favorable to the police. African-American respondents are more approving of both the protest and the Black Lives Matter movement. Negative on the police with just a 39 favorable, 49 unfavorable split there. So we do see racial differences. And when we start asking about specific police behaviors, we see bigger differences.
Charles Franklin with us, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, professor of law and public policy. We're looking at the new poll that was released yesterday. Taking your questions about the poll at 800-642-1234. Does your own opinion line up with the outcome of this poll? Where does it deviate? You can call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Charles, support for President Trump among Republicans also declined in your latest poll. What did the numbers show there?
Yeah, there's Republican voters have been very strong in their support for the president. And last month in May, 93% of Republicans said they were voting for the president. That fell to 83 this month, with 8% defecting to Biden and the others saying they don't know what they'll do. Likewise, Democratic support for Biden increased a little bit from 93, which was already very high, to 97% this month. So you're seeing consolidation of Biden's support among the Democrats, but a little bit of slippage in his support among Republicans this month. Also, independents flipped sides.
I was about to ask you about independents.
Great minds think alike. In May, independents favored Trump by 34-27. But this month, they favor Biden by 38-30. So that's a fair swing in a month for that group. However, notice that it's 38-30 now. That's only 68%. That leaves 32% who say they don't know how they'll vote, or they might vote for neither candidate and think of a third party. So independents are still far from having made up their minds. Hmm. And while this month they've swung to Biden, I think there's a long ways to go to November as independents do begin to make up their minds between the candidates.
Yeah, a long way to go to November. Wondering, what did you ask 4 years ago leading up to November 2016 election? And do you see strong echoes of those questions with what you're asking today?
Well, some things do show similar things. We asked about the candidates, whether President Trump or Vice President Biden cares about people like you. With Trump, that's 39 cares, 57 does not. With Biden, it's 46 cares, 42 does not. So Biden a little above water, Trump a good bit underwater on that question. Trump was underwater on the cares question during 2016. And on favorability, he was seen quite negatively in 2016, but so was Hillary Clinton. I think one point to make is that we've seen over time a shift in Trump's favorability, which had been negative in 2016, but began to be more positive late in the campaign, and especially once he was elected. And that shift has endured. He's net negative, but he's not nearly as net negative now as he was in 2016.
Our guide is poll director Charles Franklin, and you can join in. Do you think polls are helpful and useful, or do you feel they're skewed? What issues do you think Wisconsinites should be polled about? Does your opinion align with these results or diverge? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Charles Franklin here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The latest poll from Marquette University's law school gauged how Wisconsin voters feel about the presidential race. It also surveyed how people are responding to the protests over police brutality. Has your view of the Black Lives Matter movement changed since the killing of George Floyd? How do you feel about the protests and the calls for police reform? Do you support the message to defund police? Join in, 800-642-1234. We have Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Katie is with us from Janesville. Hi, Katie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to do with, how is the poll taken? Is it a written one or is it a spoken one? And my point is, when you were talking about specific police actions, do you ask Have you ever had a good encounter with a police officer? What are some good things that police officers do? You know, two or three good questions and then ask a bad one. Does that skew the answers in the polling in any way? You can do it for any subject, whether it's President Trump or, you know, Vice President Biden.
Those are great questions. I should have you in my polling class. That would be a good conversation for the students to hear. So the quick answer is we did this poll, as we do almost all of our polls, on the telephone with a live interviewer rather than doing them online. And so this was with a live interview. The question wording and order, certainly wording matters and order sometimes matter, though we found in this survey, order didn't make very much difference in terms of which questions we asked first. We actually test that by randomizing whether you get question A and then question B, or question B and then question A. And that way we can find out whether the order matters or not, rather than just guess. We asked, for example, how do you feel when you're around the police? Does being around the police make you feel safe or make you feel anxious? So 86% said they felt safe around the police. 11% said they felt anxious. So that's a case where this very positive view of police is reinforced by that question. But it also is the illustration of how different the experiences of Black citizens and Hispanic citizens are compared to that of whites. Among Black respondents in the sample, only 43% felt safe, 44% felt anxious. While for whites, it was 90% safe, just 8% anxious. And that, you know, is rooted in experiences that people have had and how different the world looks if you're white and feel fine and safe that the police have arrived, or if you're an African-American and you're right at an even split of anxiety and safety. We see some other differences. We asked about whether police killings are of Black people have been just isolated incidents or a broader pattern. There, the split is overall 44% isolated, 48% broader pattern. But among African-American respondents, it's 8% isolated, 86% broader pattern. While for white respondents, it's 47 isolated, 44 broader pattern. So you see these large racial differences that relate to police behavior and the experience with the police, even though white and Black respondents alike overall favorability of the police is pretty high, but it's higher for white respondents than it is for Black respondents. So there are gaps in that perception as well.
What did you see in the area of deadly force?
We've asked a couple of times, are the police too willing to use deadly force or not? 42% say they are too willing, 51% not. But again, a big racial divide. 68% of Black respondents say they're too willing, 25% not. And among white respondents, only 38% say too willing, 54% not. So I think the pattern you're seeing here is that despite events over the last few years where we've seen video and leading up to and now beyond the George Floyd death, nevertheless, these differences in perceptions by race are really substantial. And I think they reflect the different experiences of different racial groups.
Katie, thank you so much for the call. We have Charles Franklin with us, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy, looking at the new poll results, breaking them down with your questions, 800-642-1234. Well, Charles, we had Pat who writes in to ask, does caller ID reflect it's the Marquette University Law School poll calling you?
No, it does not. It just shows the call center's phone number, which no one would know. It's not one in your contacts list. We did that on purpose, though, because it's better if people decide to pick up the phone and do the survey or not without initially knowing that it's us. Now, when someone does pick up, we immediately say, I'm calling on behalf of the Marquette poll. You know, we have some questions. So people know right from the beginning, but they don't know at the moment they decide to pick up. And the reason for that is it's better not to know. We don't want people who love us to pick up, and we don't want people who hate us to pick up. We want people that don't know that it's a pollster calling. And that helps make sure that there's not an inadvertent bias in that process. When people pick up, we get about 65 to 70% who agree to do the interview. The real problem is that lots and lots of people don't pick up in the first place.
Pat also wants to know, on average, how many minutes does this interview take?
15 to 17 minutes on the phone.
Yeah. Going back to the protests here for a moment, there have been flashbacks and comparisons to the King assassination riots and the civil disturbance that swept through our country after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968. What does the approval or disapproval poll results on the protests of today tell us about what we can infer about 1968?
Yes, that analogy has been raised a lot, but I think these results show how different the two time points are. In 1968, the protests, which took place throughout the year, and at various times accompanied by riots and civil unrest in cities, had a much, much more negative approval rating. 61% approve in this case. And surely if we had asked, do you approve of breaking into windows or burning buildings, that would be far smaller. But ask just, do you approve or disapprove of the protests that are going on? To see 61% approval is very different than it was. And I think that plus the favorability to Black Lives Matter shows that there's broad sympathy for the appropriateness of response and protest to the George Floyd killing and the other killings of Black people we've seen just in the last month or so, not to mention over time. So there's more sympathy there in this case than there was in 1968. But the impact of that is that the sympathy is there, as I just showed. What to do about policing is a more mixed picture. 23% would defund, but 81% would restructure the police and make them more accountable. So between defund the police and restructure and make accountable, there's a vast political difference, a small minority in the first case and a really large majority that crosses racial lines if we ask it about restructuring and making accountable.
Charles, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.